Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution, made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Have you signed up yet? It's free. It's our Wednesday Wealth Webinar, How to Prosper in a Year of Change, 2017. It's set for December 7th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Join us for this important wealth webinar and learn how to capitalize on economic and political shifts in the coming year. Investing is all about looking ahead, and you can learn a lot from the past, but the question is always, how are we going to invest tomorrow, 2017? Just go to investtalk.com to sign up for this free wealth webinar, and we'll talk to you Wednesday, December 7th. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, November 29th, 2016 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here every weekday to try to make you a better investor and rise above the ranks of the average investor who really makes bad decisions on a regular basis because they're ill-prepared and they tend to listen to their friends or their family members and or the media, right? Watch CNBC and follow Fast Money or Cramer, you know, and those, while it may be interesting and entertaining, you're very unlikely to find the proper investment advice for you from them. And the best advice always comes from your own free will and thinking, right? Analyzing, understanding the investments that you're looking at, understanding the market and the economy, okay? So we try to be a resource for you to get clarification on any question that you might have, any money management question, hopefully offer you some ideas as well along the road. And today, as we buy or sell, we are effectively making an assumption about the future, right? And it's always said, you don't know the future, and that's true. So how do you make decisions if you don't know the future? Well, the best way to predict the future is to understand the present. I know that sounds kind of basic, but I'm going to dig into three ways that you can look at today and understand what is likely going to happen in the future. No one knows exactly what's going to happen, but I always say investing is kind of playing the odds, right? It's an educated guess, and it's putting the odds in your favor. A lot of people think the stock market and the investment game is a casino. Well, it's not. Because if you put the odds in your favor, you're going to make money. Just like in a casino where if you can find a way to put the odds in your favor, then you're going to make money over time. In the same way with the market, right? We naturally have a tendency to make emotional decisions, and that automatically puts you behind the eight ball and gives you a lower than average chance of making the right decision. Okay, and on the show, you hear Steve talk about analysts and how they're consistently wrong. It talks about it in his book. You know, predicting the future is a relative thing. Sure, analysts are consistently wrong. Sometimes they're wrong a little, sometimes they're wrong a lot, but almost always they're wrong. So don't take analysts' word as gospel. Now, The Economist wrote an article or published an article, talks about some scientific analysis of this, is that advice analysts give in bad times seems to be even worse than what they talk about in good times. So maybe they're overly pessimistic, right? And usually when they're overly pessimistic, it's usually a good time to buy. Roger Lowe of Singapore Management at the University of Ohio State looked at analyst forecasts of profits and buy and or sell recommendations they issued for the periods between 1983 and 2011. Their predictions, it turned out, were less reliable in falling markets than in rising ones, which is pretty obvious because analysts tend to be more bullish, consistently bullish. So if the market's rising, clearly their predictions are going to turn out more likely than not. Now, analysts' forecasts of profits for the next quarter were off by about 46% more during periods of financial crisis than at other times, for instance. So this drop in accuracy may be linked to maybe cuts in research budgets. And during the downturn, banks started to spend less on research, for instance. In the most recent crisis, banks cut research by 40%. What they did was they replaced the older analysts who spent cost more with younger ones. So it's pretty interesting to see how the analyst environment has changed throughout the years. You know, you had a big change after the first stock market bubble, right, in 99, 2000. Everybody was bullish on everything. Well, that's because they wanted to be a part of the IPO, and if they had a sell recommendation on that company, or they want to be part, then they wouldn't get that business. Or if they want to be part of a bond offering, they needed to have a buy recommendation. There's a lot of conflicted advice going on in that industry. So following analyst recommendations, especially on price movements, are historically fraught with inaccuracies. That's why we say, you know, you can rely on them pretty good on a good sense of where earnings might be going in the very near term. Long term, they usually don't have much of a clue. But in the near term, they have a pretty good, you know, talking about next quarter, quarter after. But they don't know where price is going as much as you do. Right? So that's some perspective on how to handle analyst recommendations that are out there. Now let's open the question and discussion line to you. We want to include you on the show. As always, we are up for any money questions. So let's get the Q&A session started. Let's go to our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART. That is our anytime number.
This is Bob from New Jersey. I really enjoy your podcast. I had a quick question. I'm looking to set up an account for my daughter. She's 5 years old, so it's more of going to be, you know, for her car or Sweet 16. So, you know, about a 10-year window. I do have a 529, so it would be in addition to her college savings account. So I was thinking of two possible things, setting up a custodial account or just doing an ETF portfolio where I would do a mixture of large, mid, small, and global funds, you know, particularly ETFs that have a 5 to 10-year good track record. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that as to which route I should take. Basically build up my own portfolio for her under my name or possibly do a custodial account. Okay. Thank you very much.
You can do both. I mean, you can run that strategy in a custodial account. So, you know, it's for her benefit. So any tax implications though would still fall on you. You know, what strategy to employ? Certainly nothing wrong with creating a diversified portfolio like you talked about, longer term time horizon. I would caution you on sticking with too much index funds. And this is something I've been doing a lot of research on and have been a lot of hard thinking of what's happening in the index fund trend. And what could the potential ramifications be? Well, everyone is now crowded into that type of strategy. And that makes them even higher risk than they normally are. And that worries me a little bit. So create a diversified portfolio, but diversify, I would say, between index funds and some actively managed strategies as well. And I would say a custodial account is a good idea, and you just have to understand the type of risk that you're willing to take. And if you have a long-term time horizon, you know, we're probably going to hit a bear market in the next 2 to 3 years at some point. Just the nature of these cycles. We're near the end of the cycle. So if you're going to dollar cost average into that cycle, that's great, but make sure you don't panic out of it either, and understand the risks that you're taking when you create that diversified portfolio. Great question, great call, and I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. I always encourage everyone to call sooner rather than later. A quick look at the markets today. You had the S&P up about 3 points, the NASDAQ up 11, the Dow up 23. You know, had a decent down day yesterday, gave back a little bit of that, or got back a little of that today. Really was kind of a ho-hum day overall. You had oil down, gold was flat, you had the dollar down a little bit, interest rates dropped a little bit. It's going to be really interesting to see where interest rates go from here after this big move. I think we're going to pull back in interest rates. It's just a matter of how far is it going to go. Are we going to get mortgage rates back well below 4%? I think that will be crucial for a continuation of this recent move in the market. Now, are you signed up for our wealth webinar coming up November 7th? It's just a week or so away. I really encourage you to invest an hour of your time, consider how you're going to respond to the changes that are sure to be coming in 2017. 2017 is going to be a very disruptive year. You're already seeing that with Trump and Brexit, probably have Italy maybe with a spark coming on Sunday with their referendum. You know, we may not be certain to just exactly what the changes will be, but we need to construct a plan with options when they arrive. So having some perspective will be very, very important. And being prepared, that's what we will be talking about. And we will show you how global politics can disrupt markets. So we're going to help you understand the impact of shifting central bank policy and explain why you should transition from growth to value investing. And again, it's December 7th. 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's free, but you do need to register on investtalk.com.
Yes, Steve. I'm wondering about AbbVie, A-B-B-V. I know you've liked it in the past. I was wondering if you still like it, and how sure are you on the dividend? Are you confident on the dividend? Thanks a lot. Like your show. Bye.
I was looking at AbbVie. This is a pharmaceutical company. Drug manufacturer, they're a biopharmaceutical company. Certainly a space that has struggled in the last year or so. And AbbVie's kind of no different. It's hit a high in 2014 in around the $70 mark, retested that area in middle 2015, and now we're hung around the $61 mark. We used to own this. We sold it in the recent past. I can't tell you the month or date or anything like that off the top of my head, but we did used to own it. It has decent value right now, so it's not overvalued by any sense. But what's the dividend? Dividend's 4.3% going forward. They just raised it. Their cash dividend payout ratio is about 52, payout ratio is around 60. So it looks relatively safe. That dividend does look relatively safe. The biggest risk, like I've been saying, overall for any biotech company, any one of these companies, is that there's could be pressure from Congress on how much they're spending on drugs, and the fact that the drug industry is raising prices. And now with Trump in, there may be less scrutiny, but, you know, Trump's kind of rogue. You know, he's not a typical Republican, so he may crack down on that as well. It's still hard to say. But I like AbbVie. It's probably one of my favorites in the industry. There are a lot of competition for some of their drugs from Gilead and other ones as well. So it's not without its risks, but it's definitely one of the better ones in the industry. And I think the dividend is relatively safe. Now, this is Invest Talk. Remember, we're not all about stocks and bonds. Any money question is on the table. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. That's our Invest Talk 24/7 listener line. Mike in San Jose. Hey, Mike.
Good. Thank you, Justin. I was wondering what your opinion would be for GDX, please.
I still think it's a good buy. You know, we had a large rally from the beginning of the year, and a lot of retail investors got excited about it and overly positioned into it. And now we've had kind of, I think, the shakeout of the retail investors, who tend to be the weak hands. Our major support was at $20 a share, and it's still, you know, hanging above that. So if it breaks below 20, then I start getting concerned. But, you know, this whole recent retrace of the move from January into August, to me, is just a shakeout of the retail investors. So I still think it will eventually make its way higher.
Do you think there's a chance it could happen before the year is over?
Sure. I mean, do I think it's going to be higher between now and the end of the year? Yeah, I mean, do I think it's going to go back to its August highs? I don't think that, you know, but I do think, you know, it's at 21, 23 at the close today. You know, could it be in the 23 to 24 area by year end? Sure, absolutely. If it gets above the 26 area, that would be, it would be a rocket ship past, and once it gets past 26.
Right. Thank you very much.
No problem. Yeah, I mean, we're kind of running out of time for the end of the year. There's only a few, you know, 5 weeks left, so it can only move. It is a fast mover, but, you know, getting back to the highs of the year would be probably too much to ask for it. But I do think it is still in a good position overall. Now, let's talk about making predictions. You know, people call me up, and they want us to make predictions, and that can be difficult. You know, it's a paradox, right? That we all know predicting the future is impossible, because you don't know exactly what the future is, but you have to do it to some degree in order to invest, right? Whenever you make a buy or sell decision, you're making some assumption about the future. Now, how do you do that? Well, you have to look at the current situation. Right? You have to look at the past, where we are in the current situation, and give you some semblance of understanding of how to make a decision about the future when you surely don't know exactly what the future is going to look like. But by looking at what is going on today, you might have a good idea of what the future will probably look like, you know? That's why I talked about top of the show. It's about playing the right probabilities, and over time, you will make a good decision and have good outcomes. So the first one is regression to the mean, okay? That's one way that you can look at what's today and what is the historical precedent of this stock, this industry, this asset class, whatever it is, right? For example, high corporate profit margins will eventually decline and return to their historical averages, right? And regression to the mean applies to a lot of areas of the market, or a lot of areas of life, economics, investing, even science, even sports, there's regression to the mean, right? Think about players that get off to a hot start early on in the season. Usually, they regress to what they normally are. They can get into a hot start, and maybe they'll have a better than average year. But generally, they'll regress to what they are normally. Then second is dependence on the initial condition. And this simply means that events don't always follow one another randomly, but one event causes or leads to the next event. So understanding what is happening today and what the eventual domino effects are going to be. For example, interest rates going up. That may not have an immediate effect on the real estate market, but it's eventually going to have an effect as long as rates stay up, right? For example, lower mortgage standards in the early 2000s led to the housing bubble in 2007, which led to the financial crisis. Okay. And then, lastly, what you pay today for an asset will be highly determinative of what your returns will be going forward. Okay? So, for example, if you pay a lot for the earnings that you're buying, because that's what you're doing, you're buying an index or a stock, you're paying up for amount of earnings. And that's why you look at the P/E ratio. And it's a very overly simplified number, but it does have predictive effect over time. High stock market P/E ratios usually lead to lower returns in the future. So if you buy the most expensive, in the most expensive times of the market, you know, the 8th decile, 9th decile, 10th decile, top 30%, your average return over the next 10 years is probably going to be about 6.8%. If you buy in the bottom 3 deciles, your annual returns going forward are probably going to be 15% over the next 10 years, twice as much, because you're buying cheaper. Okay, and then lastly, it's supply and demand. Understanding supply and demand is very instructive of what's going to happen in the future. And those are the three ways that you can understand what is happening today and extrapolate into the future. Now we're open to your money questions. I want to hear from you at 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing. Of course, every investor's goal is profits, leveraging your invested dollars to grow your retirement portfolio. But during volatile times, achieving this goal takes a well-reasoned strategy to turn sudden market moves into profits. Profits and protection, taking advantage of volatile times. One of our offerings in the webinar library, which is open to all InvestTalk insiders. Why not join up? It's a free program. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. You're listening to InvestTalk for Tuesday, November 29th. Is there good reason to contradict the customary, more conservative approach to your stocks versus bonds mix? Increase or decrease stock mix in retirement? That's one of our talking points next time. 888-99-CHART is how to get your talking point on right now.
Hi, Steve. This is Sean from New York. I have a question regarding the effect of compounding your interest of compounding money and investments with compounding increase. I don't know how me as an investor can take advantage of that. If I wanted to invest in ETFs or mutual funds, would I be able to take advantage of that and have my money increasing with the power of compounding, or there should be like investment in certain type of investments only that would offer you that effect? If you could maybe talk about that a little bit in your next show, I will be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. Bye.
Well, that's a great question, and I like that he's looking into the idea of compound interest. And really, this applies to any investment. So don't think that compound interest is just a mathematical term. Right? It's just math. So it doesn't matter what investment you are talking about. You can apply that as long as you can reinvest the growth. Right? So the whole idea is that you earn money, you make an investment, you earn a return, you reinvest that return, and that return returns more money, and you reinvest that, and you continue to compound that interest over time, and the effects are dramatic. And that's and really the best way to take advantage of compound interest is to invest early. Start earning money sooner rather than later. That's what we talk about. You shouldn't postpone investing. You should start as early as possible. Because the longer you get to compound your returns, the easier it will be to reach a goal, a financial goal, and a substantial amount of money. So, you know, applying or creating compound interest is just simply investing consistently over time and earning a consistent return. That's really what it's all about. So don't think that it's limited to real estate or limited to ETFs or mutual funds or stocks. It's as long as you're making a consistent return and you're reinvesting the proceeds and the interest you're making or return you're making on your investments, you're going to get compound interest over time. You just need to do it as soon as you possibly can. Now, before this hour is up, I want to talk to you about many things. I'm going to talk about why the SEC is hammering Tesla over its accounting practices. I also want to talk about why the fiduciary standard is not going away. Trump's talking about maybe repealing it, but I don't think it's really going away. I'm going to talk about why. And then lastly, if we have time, the global bond sell-off. Why is it happening, and is it going to continue? Now, let me jump into the Tesla thing, because I've talked about this before. I did an Invest Talk View segment on it, and if you go to our KPP page and you go back, I would say about a month or so, when they had earnings, I did a whole piece on why Tesla's earnings were borderline fraudulent. I'm not going to call them a fraud, but they were misleading in many ways. And the SEC has come out and said the exact same thing. Okay? And on September 16th, the SEC noted four specific concerns it had with Tesla's use and presentation of non-GAAP measures. And this was very prominent back in the tech bubble 1.0, and we're in the midst of tech bubble 2.0. And it's non-GAAP measures, meaning they're not using standardized accounting principles. Now, in two cases, the SEC pointed directly to its updated guidance, including chastising the company for creating an individually tailored measurement, which is not allowed. Okay, the SEC pointed out that it was unacceptable of boilerplate language about how the non-GAAP information is used. So if you're going to use non-GAAP, you need to explain specifically to your company why non-GAAP is used. You can't just use a boilerplate example. Now, they expected an answer quickly, and Tesla's initial response didn't satisfy the SEC. Okay? And why is that? Well, it's because they used certain titles to some of their metrics that really were misleading. They wanted to retitle cash flow from core operations as something else, because cash flow from core operations include financing cash flow. If you understand this, and I talked about this at our in-person wealth conference earlier this month in San Jose, talked about the sources of cash flow. One is operating cash flow, one is financing cash flow, and one is investment cash flow. Well, Tesla has a ton of financing cash flow because all that is issuing stock, issuing bonds, you know, basically outside money, investors pouring money into Tesla, them raising capital. Well, they misled the investor saying that this is part of their core operations. Well, it's not. What they need to be talking about is operating cash flow. And what the SEC told them, in fact, is that in its first letter on September 16th, to please clearly state that you have not generated positive operating cash flows in the past two fiscal years, not quarters, years, and when you anticipate that you will generate positive operating cash flows, if at all. This is what I'm talking about, and I've been hammering about this. Tesla is a financial disaster. They are burning cash at an alarming rate, and they just bought SolarCity, which is also burning cash at an alarming rate, and they're going to have to raise capital sooner than later. And my question in next earnings is, are they going to clearly state when, if at all, they're ever going to generate positive operating cash flows? Because ultimately, that's what they need to do. That's what all sustainable businesses do. They make money off their operations. And Tesla has not shown the ability to do that in any sustainable manner. Not even close. So yes, does Tesla make great products? Sure. Is Tesla great at marketing those products? Absolutely. Is Tesla great at making money from selling their products? Not in the slightest. And this is what I'm talking about when when we avoid these story stocks. And that's what Tesla is in its core. It is a story. It is a warm and fuzzy story. And I would love for it to play out in a magnificent way. Because I would love to be in an environment where we didn't have combustion engines and we didn't use oil to fuel our transportation. But in reality, Tesla has not shown its ability to build that future in a sustainable manner. And to be frank, there are many other car companies, such as Toyota, that has a much better chance of building a fleet of vehicles, a zero emission vehicles, electric vehicles, than Tesla. Much better chance. They have factories already. They have intellectual property. They know how to build cars. They've been doing it for decades. They've been building the Prius for a long time. Longer than Tesla's been building electric cars. And guess what? They know how to do it in a profitable manner. And this is what the SEC is calling Tesla out and saying, you can't sit here and tell investors that you are cash flow positive when you're not. Now, we still have time for your question. We have about 15 minutes left in the show. 888-99-CHART is how to get through. Steve and I are convinced that there is a way for the average investor to manage their 401k property properly. And we have a new service, My401k, helps solve this 401k selection problem. We believe this new system can help meet a serious challenge for every average investor out there who's looking to figure out a way to help manage their investments inside their 401k within the confines of their employer's plan. It's a great new service that we recently launched. So to find out more, just head to investtalk.com, click on the Investments tab.
Steve is in San Jose visiting with our listeners for individual retirement reviews today. He also sets aside time during the month for individual sessions via Skype and telephone. And if you'd like to reserve your own hour with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
Hello, Steve and Justin. My name is Angela. I'm a resident of England at this moment and have been an expat for 10 years in Europe. I'm getting some money soon and I'd like to start investing it, potentially with a mutual fund, but I'm not sure if I should do this within the United States, England, or where I lived in the Netherlands. I don't know which country I plan to retire in and what is the best advice you can give me about starting out my investments. Enjoy the show. Thank you very much.
Never had this question. And frankly, I don't have an answer. I don't want to give you an answer because I've, almost all of our clients are in America. I think we do have a few overseas, but they are American citizens. Sounds like you are an American citizen. I don't have an answer. I wish I did. And I don't know enough about your situation. You don't really have an idea of where you're going to retire. It just makes it very hard to give you a right answer. And so I'm going to give you no answer. And that's sometimes the case. I don't have every answer. But hopefully you find the right answer. Now, we have still time for your questions. 888-99-CHART is how to get through. 888-992-4278. Let's talk a little bit about a question I got from Gary. He submitted a question. He says, hello, Justin. Two questions for the Invest Talk show. Could you please talk about buying investment vacation rental properties in Costa Rica? I mentioned staying there for a few months a year and renting it the rest of the year via vacation rental properties. He also says, what's your opinion of VRBO, HomeAway, Airbnb, etc.? Thank you so much for your valuable show. It's my only must-listen-to podcast. Well, thank you, Gary. We appreciate that. Certainly, that's not a bad idea. You know, investing in Costa Rica is different than investing here in America. You certainly need an agent that operates there, who understands the laws and pitfalls and regulations, that's dealt with American investors before. I don't necessarily have one to give you, but you certainly want to do that first. So don't you want to go down there, look at multiple properties, multiple areas, multiple price points. I'm not sure if VRBO, HomeAway, Airbnb, if they operate there. I would imagine they do. One thing you have to understand, and everybody out there, and this is a pretty popular thing, I think, now, is this vacation rental idea. You know, they see how much you can get from these vacation rental sites, and a lot of times you can make very good returns, especially if it's a very popular vacation spot, right? What I'm cautious about is the next recession. Vacation dip during a recession. People have less money to travel, right? Because they're losing their jobs, or maybe their pay is going down, or for whatever reason, they just tend to travel less. Less optimistic about the economy, etc. And hotels know this very well. And guess what's going to happen? Vacation rentals are going to drop when that happens. Now, long term, I think things are moving towards vacation rentals and away from hotels. And I think that's going to continue. So make sure that you're not overly reliant on this vacation rental income. And have a large buffer in case your rental income drops in half from what you projected to be today based on, you know, what prices are in that area. Because that easily could happen. And as more and more people do this, you're going to get more competition. And that's naturally going to push down the price you can get for your Airbnb or your vacation rental, say that. So those are good sites. There's nothing wrong with using them. But understand that there's a lot of more risk involved in that type of an investment, real estate investment, than your standard buy and rent to somebody who's there 365 days a year, right? Who's renting out every month on a one-year lease, etc. That's a much safer investment than a vacation rental. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. We've got one more segment coming up left for you. We'll take the time for your call, if you make that call, and you can do that right now, 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime listener line, and we're here for you, and we're going to talk to Jay in Dublin coming up next. Let's go to Jay in Dublin. How are you doing, Jay?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Just a quick question. TripAdvisor has fallen down a lot, and I want to know if you think it's a good buy at this point, or should we wait and buy it?
It has certainly fallen a lot, gone from 110 down to 49. It was 110 just in 2014. So that's certainly a large drop. The big question is it cheap enough? Is it cheap enough? And I'm going to say, I don't think it is. You know, its operating earnings yield is only 1.8%. That's not exactly exciting. Its cash from operations has fallen. It's fallen from $475 million in 2014 in the second quarter all the way down to $320 last quarter. And it's just not cheap enough, to be honest with you. It's certainly a good company, but I'm just not enamored with the numbers yet, to be honest with you. And it's technically still in a downtrend. nothing about it makes me think that this is going to stop soon. So I think it's a good company to have on your radar, because it's certainly not a, it's not a bad company. A big, big support coming up here at about 46. It's at 49 now. So if you were to pick it up from a technical perspective, that's, you know, for a trade, that might be a good spot for a trade. But beyond that, you know, I'm not a huge fan of it. But keep it on your watch list.
All right. Thank you so much.
No problem. That was TripAdvisor. TRIP is the symbol. Now, we have a new president-elect, Donald Trump, and there are some regulations. He wants to roll back a lot of regulations. And one of those that have been talked about, not necessarily by him in particular, but some of his top advisors have discussed it, is rolling back the fiduciary duty rule. And this came out earlier this year. It's supposed to take effect early next year. And I think this would be a regulation that he probably shouldn't try to roll back, because I think that they got it right, basically. The Department of Labor got it right. And the ultimate ethos of this rule is about reducing and eliminating, eventually, conflicts of interest. And our industry, my industry, is fraught with this. Okay? And what this Department of Labor rule does, the fiduciary rule, requires advisors to act in the best interests of our clients. You know, we are fiduciaries, we've been fiduciaries ever since the beginning because we're registered investment advisors. But there's a lot of brokers out there that do not have a fiduciary duty, do not have the rule that they have to act in their client's best interest. Well, this rule has kind of shed light on this, and most people are starting to ask their advisor, are you a fiduciary? And it's getting harder and harder for them to say no. In fact, Merrill Lynch just eliminated all commission-based options for retirement accounts. And killing this rule after it's gone so far, it actually take a lot of work on the part of President-elect Trump, and it would have to pass the threat of a filibuster in the Senate. And I think there's a lot of other potential rules that he wants to repeal than this one. So I actually think it will eventually go into effect, which I think is a good thing. And it's really a simple goal, and that is to have competitively priced and transparent fee structures, and that investors should have confidence that their advisors aren't having a conflict of interest. They're not giving conflicted recommendations for commissions only, and that's what happens so often, is that these brokers are, especially think of annuities, universal life policies, these are all products that are sold based on commissions, and that creates a huge conflict of interest. And so that's why I don't think that the fiduciary rule will get overturned. Now our time is up for this hour. Remind you to sign up for our free wealth webinar coming up a week from tomorrow, December 7th, from 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific Time. How to Prosper in a Year of Change, 2017. It's free, but you do need to register on InvestTalk.com. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Steve Peasley and I, along with everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today, and we'll be here tomorrow. So why don't you join us again then?
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.